Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. 50 years ago tomorrow, the news cameras were rolling, the reporters were doing their stand-uppers at raucous crowds in L.A.'s Ambassador Hotel, celebrating Robert F. Kennedy's big primary win in his race for the Democratic nomination for president. And then, this.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible? Is that possible? It could be. Is it possible, ladies and gentlemen? It is possible. He has. Not only Senator Kennedy, oh my God, Senator Kennedy has been shot.
America was not in a good place in 1968. Vietnam and the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. happened just months before. But a lot of people dared believe that Robert Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, had a magic touch, that he could bring the country together and help America be its best self at home and abroad. Joining me from Washington to talk about all this is Richard Kahlenberg, senior fellow at the Century Foundation. His recent essay is called The Inclusive Populism of Robert F. Kennedy, and you could find a link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Richard, welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. Remind us what was happening in the summer of 1968. Set the stage as we look back on the anniversary of Robert F. Kennedy's assassination.
Well, 1968, of course, was an incredibly tumultuous year. We saw the assassination of Dr. King in April. Lyndon Johnson withdrew his candidacy for the Democratic nomination for president about a week earlier. And we had some exciting candidates running for president. Eugene McCarthy was running as a peace candidate, opposed to the Vietnam War. And then we saw the entry of Robert Kennedy, the brother of a slain president, who began the campaign in Indiana and tried to do something which very few progressives have done since then. He tried to pull together a political coalition of African Americans, Latinos, who strongly believed in his powerful message about civil rights, but also to appeal to white working class voters, many of whom had voted for the segregationist George Wallace in a previous election. And the remarkable thing, the part of the reason that we're still talking about Robert Kennedy's campaign 50 years later, is that he appeared to pull this off. He was able to unite the country around a shared vision, what I've called a liberalism without elitism, and a populism without racism.
So he had this incredible appeal, this cross-cutting appeal among Black, Latino, working class, white constituencies at this time of great tension in our country. And then June 5th, 1968, the night of the California primary, the last of the Democratic primary season. Richard, what happened?
Well, Kennedy was tragically assassinated by Saran Saran, and we saw the wings of the coalition that he was trying to bring together split further apart, with working class whites moving towards Richard Nixon and George Wallace, who was also running that year. Chaos at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, and really the effort to construct what might be called a tough liberalism saw its demise with the death of Robert Kennedy.
I wanted to play this clip because it's so moving. This was on NPR's StoryCorps just last week. Juan Romero recounted cradling Robert F. Kennedy's head after he was shot that night on the floor of the Ambassador Hotel's kitchen. Romero was 17 and working as a busboy at the time.
I kneeled onto him and put my hand between the cold concrete and his head just to make him comfortable. I could see his lips moving, So I put my ear next to his lips, and I heard him say, "Is everybody okay?" I said, "Yes, everybody's okay." I could feel the steady stream of blood coming through my fingers. I had a rosary in my shirt pocket, and I took it out, thinking that he would need it a lot more than me.
Richard Kahlenberg, it's hard to describe that moment in this country, how this country sort of came together. You talk about the coalitions before he was assassinated, but how this country came together in a collective moment of grief on the heels of Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination just a few months before. There was real fear in this country. Is our country safe? Is our democracy safe?
Well, that's right. And one of the remarkable moments in American political history was occurred right after Robert Kennedy was assassinated. He was flown from Los Angeles to New York for his funeral service, and then took a train ride. His body took a train ride from New York to Washington, D.C. to be buried at Arlington Cemetery. And people have remarked that if you were going to have a tribute to Robert Kennedy, it was there along the train tracks, because poor and working class people are those in this country who live near train tracks, and they lined up, African American, Latino, white working class families to pay tribute to their fallen hero. And we really haven't had a political figure who's been able to bring those groups together, groups that are hurting, all of them, and yet are divided by politics since those days.
We have that clip here, the train tracks, that moment. So many people watching Senator Kennedy's body. This is from the Netflix documentary Bobby Kennedy for President. Kennedy campaign worker Michael Dvorkin describes what it was like on the train when Bobby Kennedy's casket from New York to Arlington Seminary, a cemetery in Washington, came by.
People were on the train tracks, hanging from the rafters. Nobody had any clue what kind of reaction there was going to be. People inside the train were also overwhelmed by the response of average people.
Richard, take us back to a young Robert Kennedy. We have this image of Bobby Kennedy, the shaggy hair, the skinny ties, the shirt sleeves rolled up. That early RFK, what was he like, and how did he evolve over time to the person he became, who was able to generate this incredible support among really a wide population of people?
Right. Well, he was, as a Kennedy, born to great wealth and went, like his brother John, to Harvard University. But at the same time, he was described as kind of the scrawny one of the Klan, and had that that desire to fight against the establishment. And so early in his career, he worked for the Senate in investigations of communists and of racketeering among the labor movement. He then became campaign manager for his brother John Kennedy, where he gained a reputation really for ruthlessness. He was the one who had to deliver the bad news to people who were disappointed, and so he acquired a reputation for toughness, but not necessarily in a positive sense. A lot of people didn't like the young Bobby Kennedy. Then, when his brother John was elected president, Robert Kennedy became a very young attorney general of this nation, and really started to find his voice and fought for civil rights, for integration, standing up for the Black liberation movement, and then people often point to the assassination of his brother in 1963 as a real turning point where he saw. In a very real way, the pain that people can feel in life, and translated that into a passion for addressing some of the great ills in our society, poverty and racial discrimination and senseless wars. And so he managed to transform himself from a sort of a centrist or even conservative Democrat into a tribune for the underprivileged.
Here's archival footage included in the new Netflix documentary Bobby Kennedy for President, where RFK talks with white voters about the increasing turmoil in the country in 1968.
This rioting, it seems like there's no law and order anymore. The people, the cops have to stand around and watch all this looting going on.
We're going to have to have law and order in the United States. That's what we have to establish, that we won't tolerate lawlessness, violence, and disorder.
I mean, we've got to get this stopped. It's going to get out of hand completely.
I agree. I think that we just have to make sure that people have jobs.
It's so interesting to hear his voice. And here he is in April 1968, Robert F. Kennedy. He was met with boos at Indiana University when he called for an end to educational draft deferments during the Vietnam War.
Shall I tell you why I think that we shouldn't have student deferments? Because I think that first, no matter what one feels personally about this conflict, the fact is that the war, the burden of this war, has been borne chiefly and primarily by the poor of the United States.
Richard Kahlenberg, he raised deep moral issues surrounding the Vietnam War, but he threaded the needle very carefully on this issue.
Absolutely. And that was his brilliance as a moral leader and also as a politician. So lots of liberal candidates had talked in the past about the common interests that working class white and black people have around those economic issues. But Kennedy saw it was important to respect the values of working class people as well as their interests. And so in your clips, I think that's vividly demonstrated. He was for law and order at the same time as he was for fighting racial injustice. On national security issues, he thought the Vietnam War was going in the wrong direction. But at the same time, he recoiled at kind of the liberal elitism on campus, where privileged white students were
draft
getting,
dodging.
They were doing it legally. That was the problem, is that they could get that deferment, so he saw both sides of that, and I think that's why voters of very, very different backgrounds, you know, African-American voters on the one hand, former George Wallace voters on the other, saw something appealing in him.
A lot of calls here. Like Mike first from Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm just calling to say that I remember when Robert Kennedy was shot. I was 13 years old. My dad was in the military. His brother, John, had just been shot while we were in Germany. Then we returned back to the United States, and Martin Luther King was shot while we were in Fort Benning, Georgia. And then just Dad had been he was reassigned, and when Robert Kennedy was shot.
And what do you remember feeling in that moment, Mike?
I remember a profound sense of hopelessness. First John F. Kennedy, then Martin Luther King, then Robert F. Kennedy. Everyone who was concerned about fairness seemed to be dead. And it's not that much unlike, it's very similar to right now. In a weird sort of way. Except
we'll get to those lessons in just a minute, and I do appreciate you calling, Mike. My time is short, and I want to get Tom in here from Manchester, Connecticut. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Jane. I'm African-American, and I was about 11 and a half years old when it happened and felt a profound loss because he seemed like he had soothing words after Dr. King's assassination. He seemed to be the right candidate, you know, before his death by Sirhan, that unfortunately, I guess, picked him up out of anger, what happened to the Palestinian people after the Six-Day War. But I'm glad, I guess, that Rosie Grier, a former football player, stepped in and grabbed the gun away from him. And it was never the same because of Nixon coming in on the Law and Order, and he became anti-black, making it along the way before the Whitewater. Mm-hmm. But I think it was profound loss. It's never been the same again. The only two
never same again. Tom, I'm so sorry to cut you off, but my time is so short. And Richard, I mean, it's hard to know. Do you ever think he could have beat Nixon, RFK?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people who have played this out, the what-ifs. But certainly we saw that he could, that Robert Kennedy could have appealed to a lot of the voters that Nixon ended up getting. Nixon was struck when watching Robert Kennedy campaign and remarked to a reporter, people think that Bobby Kennedy is more law and order than I am. Well, that was part of Nixon's kind of insidious appeal. He didn't balance the call for order with a call for fairness and civil rights. And Robert Kennedy was able to do that. And so we would have had a very, very different country if Robert Kennedy had been president instead of Richard Nixon.
RFK, many people say, well, he's been romanticized a bit. He certainly had some rough edges. But to Mike's point, the caller, does Robert Kennedy's campaign, his life, the way he brought coalitions together, does it have any relevance 50 years later in the age of in our political age today?
Well, I think part of the reason we're talking so much about Robert Kennedy is not just the 50th anniversary of his campaign and his assassination, but also because of the 2016 election. I mean, it was astounding. We had Donald Trump, a conservative, winning 22% of former Obama white working class voters. And Bobby Kennedy had done the exact opposite. He had brought over the Wallace voters, and so it's really a moment when we have to think about the possibilities and the lessons for today.
Richard Collenberg, senior fellow at the Century Foundation, and 50 years after the assassination of RFK, looking at the lessons from that time. Thank you, Richard, very much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jane. Appreciate it.
Continue the conversation, listeners. We're at onpointradio.org on Twitter and Facebook. Thank you so much for your calls. Big Hour. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.